Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Don't forget to get your picks in by the end of the day for our weekly Pick'em contest. I'll give you my picks next hour for the football weekend, but you can make yours in the meantime. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com to enter your picks for our weekly Pick'em contest. Up to 5 p.m. today, the winner gets themselves a Fan Zone gift card with our Pick'em contest going all football season long. charlestonsportsradio.com. I gave you the best football matchups of the weekend last hour. I'm most intrigued in college football tomorrow. The game most intriguing to me is Clemson and Pittsburgh. Clemson playing in Pittsburgh or at Pittsburgh for the first time in over 70 years. First trip there since Pitts joined the conference. And Pittsburgh's favorite at home against Clemson. The largest underdog the Tigers have been in the ACC in 8 years. First time in over a decade that they're unranked, facing a ranked team in the conference. And polar opposites. Clemson's offense is struggling. Pittsburgh's offense has been really good. It's a very intriguing matchup tomorrow. Joining us now to break it down and give us the lowdown on Pittsburgh and how they've been playing this year is Johnny McGonigal, who covers Pittsburgh for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's with us now. Johnny, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate the time. Looking forward to this game tomorrow. Obviously, you've been all around this Pittsburgh team this year. Let's start with this. When you look at the ACC as a whole, from what you've seen from Pittsburgh, I know Wake Forest is undefeated and they're ranked a little bit higher, but where does Pittsburgh stack up right now in the ACC? Is this the best team the way they've been playing in the ACC? Are they second? Where would you put Pittsburgh right now in this conference?
Look, I really think it depends on what happens tomorrow, but Pitt has been playing really well. I mean, they are, if not the best team, one of the top two or three teams in this conference that, you know, is totally wide open. I mean, in the preseason AP poll had three ACC teams ranked. Clemson, North Carolina, Miami, none of those three teams are ranked right now. It's Pitt, NC State, and Wake, you know, just as everyone expected at the midseason point, right? But look, I think Pitt, regardless even of what happens tomorrow, because of where they are positioned in the Coastal right now, I think Pitt, I mean, they're the betting favorite to win the ACC title right now. They have the best odds when you look at ESPN's projections. And that's simply because they have such a cushion in the Coastal right now. But if they come out tomorrow and beat Clemson, I mean, I think they're clear and obviously the number one team in the conference.
Yeah, which is interesting about this. I've been talking about that this week, that I'm sure a lot of teams in the conference have been looking for this opportunity where you get Clemson not only coming to your building, but Clemson now vulnerable. All right? The rest of the ACC has been waiting for this for years. Being around the program this week, what type of sense have you gotten for Pittsburgh in terms of how they view this game, the magnitude of this game, having Clemson come to their building and they're favored with a chance to beat Clemson and continue on trying to win the ACC this year?
Yeah, look, they're undeniably excited about this game. Pat Narduzzi, like a lot of coaches, preaches the 1-0 mentality, treat each game the same. And, you know, he's got a really senior team. It's not just Kenny Pickett. I mean, they've got a couple of seventh-year seniors on the roster, you know, wide receiver Trey Tipton and linebacker John Patrician. A lot of guys who came back this season using that COVID year of eligibility. So it's an experienced team. It's a team that, while they haven't necessarily been in this position specifically, you know, they've been around the game for a long time. They understand the magnitude of some of these games. They played Penn State in the past, and those are obviously big games for Pitt. So they know the mentality that it takes to come in and win a game like this. But, you know, while they are saying at one end, like, hey, we're treating it like any other opponent, they know that it's not just any other opponent. This is Clemson. For them, they still say, they being, you know, Kenny Pickett and Pat Narduzzi, still say that this is the top team in the conference. It's the top dog. It's one that's won six straight conference titles, right? So that's their stance on it, and they know that it's going to be a tough game tomorrow.
Pittsburgh 5-1 this year. That one loss was at home to Western Michigan. I think that's what holds people back when really considering this Pittsburgh team. What went wrong that day? What happened that Pittsburgh, right now number 23 team in the country, but they did lose at home to Western Michigan last month. How did that happen?
Yeah, look, if they didn't lose that game, you're looking at a top 15, maybe a top fringe top 10 team right now. But yeah, the Western Michigan loss, they lost 44-41. So, you know, it wasn't on Kenny Pickett. You know, the kid had six touchdown passes in that game. It was a defense, totally botched that game. The RPOs that Western Michigan was running, they were running little RPO slants all day over the middle, converting third down after third down after third down, moving the ball at will and getting in the end zone. And that's why, like, when I look at this game against Clemson for Pitt, Pitt's defense is, you know, it's a quarters scheme. Front seven pressures the quarterback, you know, stops the run, and then their corners are pretty much on an island. If Clemson's able to hit on some of these RPOs and let DJ Uiagalelei throw the ball downfield and do so successfully, then Pitt's in trouble. If they're able to clamp down on him in the backfield, affect some of his throws, like they have the last few weeks. They defended the RPO well at Virginia Tech last week, beating the Hokies 28-7. So if they're able to do something similar against Clemson tomorrow, I think the defense will be in fine shape.
I'll ask you about that defense and Clemson's offense in just a moment. But, you know, I find it interesting about this Pittsburgh team that you have Pat Narduzzi, who is a defensive coach, and yet their offense is the one leading them. Like you said, the offense have been so good. It sounds crazy, but when you look at the numbers, this point in the season for Pickett, they compare really well to Joe Burrow's numbers at this point of the season 2 years ago when, you know, LSU went undefeated. What has led to this turnaround? Pickett had a solid year last year, but he looks to be much better this year. What's led to this this real jump in his production this season?
Yeah, look, everything's clicking, and I think it starts with his experience with offensive coordinator Mark Whipple, who has, you know, NFL experience, former head coach in college. He's been at Pitt now. This is his third season. And really, you know, that relationship between a quarterback and an offensive coordinator is so important. And these guys have been together for over 1,000 days now. They know each other well. One of the main reasons why Kenny Pickett decided not to enter the draft last year, he had a Senior Bowl invite, was that Mark Whipple would be there as his offensive coordinator and lead him for a third year. So that relationship is really strong. Jordan Addison, a wide receiver who broke out last year as a true freshman, caught a touchdown down at Clemson. He's been out of his mind so far this season, catching 9 touchdown passes. They finally have a tight end in Lucas Kroll. It's a tight end that's been an enigma for Pitt over the last 5 years, really. And then their offensive line is blocking really well in pass protection. They're a top 10 unit in the country in that regard. So really just everything's coming together for this offense. It's not just Pickett. Pickett is playing out of his skin. He's playing very well. But, you know, it's really everything that's, you know, kind of coming together really here.
Tomorrow's an intriguing matchup because you have that Pittsburgh top 10 offense against a Clemson top 10 defense, strength for strength. You know, let's see what wins out tomorrow. So for this particular matchup, Pickett has struggled against Clemson in the past, but for the reasons you just laid out, I mean, this is a better offense this year. Clemson is not pressuring the quarterback as much this year as years past. So for tomorrow's game specifically, how do you view this matchup for Pittsburgh's offense? I mean, they average almost 50 points a game. What do you see them being able to do tomorrow against Clemson?
Well, look, I think it's a pretty simple thing to say, but I think it's going to come down to Kenny Pickett. You know, last week, they were able to really run the ball well against Virginia Tech. Izzy Abanikanda, a sophomore that Pitt fans had been waiting to really get the opportunity to break out. He had 21 carries, 140 yards, was killing clock, was carrying the ball against the Hokies and really helped them win that game on a windy day. I don't think he's going to be able to get the edge the way he did against Virginia Tech against this Clemson front seven. It's a stout front seven. So it's going to come down to Pickett. And, you know, is he patient enough to take what the defense gives him? Does he hit on those throws downfield that he's been so good at this season? I mean, throwing, you know, past 20 yards, he's arguably been the best in the country so far this season. So I think it's going to come down to, can Pitt run enough in the red zone to crack that Clemson red zone defense that has been so good? And really, can it connect on plays downfield? We saw one of Pickett's 4 interceptions last year was a flea flicker into double coverage. He can't make those mistakes tomorrow.
Couple last moments with Johnny McGonigal, who covers Pittsburgh for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. On the flip side, as you touched on earlier about that Pittsburgh defense against Western Michigan, tomorrow you have a struggling Clemson offense, 17th fewest points in the country, going on the road to Pitt, trying to keep up with that Pittsburgh offense, depending on how the game goes. How do you view that matchup? We've been waiting in these parts. We've been waiting each week for Clemson's offense to wake up. Is tomorrow an opportunity where Clemson could potentially move the football against this defense?
It is an opportunity if you just, you know, you look at what Pitt, what their defense struggled with against Western Michigan. We hit on the RPOs earlier. I mean, that's going to be, if Clemson breaks out of its rut offensively, and if it's going to win this game, it's going to have to hit on those plays. If they don't, I think it could get ugly. I mean, we've seen that Uiagalelei is just not really comfortable back there. And really, this Pitt front seven is nasty. I think it's the best linebacker group in the ACC. Obviously, they lost a couple of consensus All-Americans at the end last year. Patrick Jones and Rashad Weaver had an impact on that game down at Death Valley. But I think this Pitt defense is good enough, at least from a front seven, to pressure DJ, you know, affect his throws. But it's really going to be if they can hit on these slants, hit on these RPOs in the passing game, then I think that could be what carries Clemson to a win.
How many points would you guess, putting you on the spot, how many points would you guess would be required from Clemson's offense to try to beat Pittsburgh tomorrow?
I'd say at least 28.
Yeah. So.
And I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Yeah, you and me both. We haven't seen that happen yet this year. And that's why I struggle in viewing this matchup, seeing Clemson going there and winning. So let me put you on the spot again. Do you think Pittsburgh, when you sit down to write this story after the game tomorrow, you think you're writing about a Pittsburgh victory tomorrow?
I do. Yeah, my my prediction this week is Pitt 31, Clemson 16. I'm a prove me kind of guy. It's like I'm not going to believe something until I see it necessarily. And with this Clemson offense, I just haven't seen it yet this season. So until they go out there and they do it, I'm going to assume they score, you know, struggle to get to 20 points. And I don't think Pitt will have that same struggle necessarily.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. All right, I'll let you get out of here on this one. I grew up in the Northeast. Even when, you know, Boston College had a couple of good years, still everyone's focused on the Patriots and the Red Sox and the Bruins. In the Northeast in particular, you know, college football takes a back seat. You know better than me when it comes to Pittsburgh. What's the vibe in that area with the Steelers season going on and Pitt playing in that same stadium? Are people in that area, are they bought into this Pittsburgh team with how good of a year they're having?
Look, Pitt fans are, and I think that over the years, Pitt fans have had this kind of natural trepidation or cautious optimism that the rug will be pulled out from underneath them at any moment. So, but you know, from a citywide perspective, I think if they beat Clemson tomorrow, that's really what would put them over the top in terms of getting some, you know, real consistent citywide attention, because the Steelers are still king. You know, they're still the popular kids in school, especially, you know, even on a bye week right now. So if Pitt's able to go out there and beat Clemson, get to 6-1, I think they'll garner even more attention that they've already gotten.
Yeah, it's a huge game tomorrow for Pitt. Big game, of course, for Clemson as well, going on the road. He's Johnny McGonigal, who covers Pittsburgh for Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Read him online. Get ready for the matchup tomorrow. Follow him on Twitter at jmcgonigal9. Johnny, appreciate all the time and the insight. Great stuff, and enjoy the game tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Johnny McGonigal, who covers Pitt football. I said covers Pittsburgh, right? That's always the weird thing. You know what I mean, though. He doesn't actually cover, like, the city of Pittsburgh. He covers Pitt football. We just refer to them as Pittsburgh, or really, more commonly, Pitt. But, yeah, I mean, growing up in the Northeast, and more Northeast than Pittsburgh, you know, that's the one area, because you have Penn State specifically, and Pittsburgh maybe here or there, I don't know, but that's an NFL town with the Steelers. Penn State, you got nothing in that area. Penn State's the one team in that, like, Northeast region that when they're good, you take notice of it. Otherwise, even when Boston College was good, they're still the fifth most interesting team in the area by the sports fans. UConn had a couple of good years. Us UConn fans were into it, but still, you know, you're talking about the Patriots and the Jets and the Giants, even though there's no NFL team in the state of Connecticut. College football, and there really haven't been a great college football team, you know, and if you go further northeast than Penn State, there really hasn't been great college football teams in the area, and I think it goes hand in hand. What came first, right? Is it the chicken or the egg? I don't know. The interest or the lack of success leading to the lack of interest, whatever it may be, but it's more about the NFL. And so when you're Pittsburgh and you're playing in the same stadium as the Steelers, right, it's like the Clippers and the Lakers. The Clippers are never going to be as big as the Lakers, and they're like the little brother playing in their stadium. Pitt is like the little brother playing in the Steelers stadium as well, and you have the Steelers, one of the biggest brands in the NFL, right there sharing that stadium with you that more people are concerned with. I'm just curious what the vibe is that you have a really good team here in Pittsburgh. You have one of the best quarterbacks in the country. You have a huge game tomorrow against Clemson. I'm curious if they are buying in or if it's still, you know, an NFL city about the Steelers. I imagine it is, but I'm sure the interest has increased about Pittsburgh. But, you know, when you have a great year like that, you want to have that same attention that it would garner down here if you're Pittsburgh. And Pat Narduzzi, by the way, a fellow Connecticut native, head coach of Pittsburgh. He's from Connecticut, so I'm sure he's familiar. He played his college football at Rhode Island. That's not a school that gets very much pub when it comes to the football program, so I'm sure he's very familiar with that whole aspect. But he's got a good team there. They're probably still on the back burner locally in that area behind the Steelers. But when it comes to tomorrow's game, you know, Clemson won't take them lightly. Pittsburgh will be ready to go. It'll be a fascinating game. I'll give you my official picks next hour. But I'm very concerned about Clemson's offense trying to keep up because Kenny Pickett and that Pittsburgh offense has been really good. But there's a reason why I made it the most interesting game of the college football weekend, just because I love this matchup. Top 10 offense versus a top 10 defense. And meanwhile, the B storyline is, can Clemson's offense do enough to try to keep up? Or can the defense slow down Pittsburgh enough where it gives their own offense a chance to catch up? Johnny said 28-plus points. I think it'll be 25-plus points. I think Clemson could hold Pitt to about 24 tomorrow. I think that's a good performance. But can the offense score 25, 26, 27, somewhere in that area to win the game? I'm not so sure. I'll give you my official picks coming up next hour. When we come back, we will preview Week 7 of the NFL season. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Johnny McGonigal, who covers Pitt football for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. You can find him on Twitter at jmcgonigal9. Read his work online and get ready for tomorrow's game and preview the opponent as he just broke down Pitt football with us in this matchup tomorrow with Clemson a moment ago. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Podcasts also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. I'll give you my picks coming up next hour, including that Clemson-Pittsburgh game. And we'll also run through all of the games in Week 7 of the NFL season to preview those matchups on Sunday. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's first go to the phone. Sam is with us. Sam, what's going on? How are you?
Good. Hey, I just let you know that there's a fire alarm downtown Charleston, if you know that.
A fire alarm? Where at?
It's downtown at the College of Charleston. I'm right near the Satori Theater next to the Campus Center Apartments.
Okay, well, hopefully everybody's okay. Make sure you stay safe.
All right.
Oh, that doesn't sound good. Well, appreciate it, Sam. Hopefully everything's okay down there. Those fire alarms. Let's go. Sam, I guess, is back with us. Let's go back to the phones. He's got a question. Sam, what's up?
Hey, I'm sorry about the noise. I have a quick question about the college football tomorrow.
Yes, yeah.
Who is North Carolina playing?
Nobody tomorrow. They have a bye week. They play Notre Dame next week.
Okay, so here's another question.
Yeah.
I just heard something from Everett German this last week.
Uh-huh.
You know Everett?
Yes, of course.
Well, he took me back last night about the having fans in the stands for the basketball season.
Uh-huh.
I'm just curious to say, are they having concession stands this year, do you think, or what do you think about it?
I'm not sure. What do you think?
Well, I feel 100% about this because of how many fans will be on the stands this year. And my only concern is that how many capacity does it have for the season?
How many what?
How many minimum capacity should be seating?
I have no idea. Hopefully it is full capacity. It sounds like quite the scene down there. Hopefully everything's okay. And Sam, make sure you're okay too. He said he's 100% sure that they're going to have the concession stands, but it seems like less than 100% because he's very concerned. He keeps asking about that. Don't worry. I'm sure they'll have the concession stands. You'll be able to get those hot dogs we talked about before. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Back to the phones. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on?
Hello?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, Luke, how are you doing?
Good.
Real quick, BYU is playing Washington State. And Washington State just lost their employment. They just lost their whole coaching staff.
Yep.
And how is that going to play out? It's a three-point. I think they're giving 3 points to BYU. And that's, they say, don't touch that game. What do you think about that game?
Yeah, that's a good question. I like BYU. I liked them a lot. They were ranked as high as 10th, and they've lost a couple of games they shouldn't have. I think they're a better team. As you mentioned, Washington State is having some issues with the whole coaching staff. If I had to choose, I would lean BYU. I have no idea what you're going to get out of Washington State with the situation that they find themselves in. But BYU has been a little disappointing these last couple of weeks. So, personally, I would stay away. But if I had a pick, I would think BYU should win that game.
Yeah, they said if you're better, stay away from it. Okay, and real quick, the Ben Simmons situation.
Yeah.
Brooklyn, I believe, is going to take the game tonight. Even though I have, you know, I have a family member playing for the Sixers, I think they're giving Philly +3. I think with all this distraction, and they beat a team in New Orleans who's really weren't on the same level as the Sixers, but Brooklyn is going to be prepared tonight. I think Durant and Harding are going to be, they're not going to lose tonight. And giving them three, they're giving -3 to Brooklyn, I think that's a really good take.
You think Brooklyn wins tonight in Philly?
I think they're going to cover the three.
Yeah.
You give -3, you're giving Brooklyn 3, right?
No, Brooklyn's favored.
Oh, okay. Brooklyn's favored?
Yeah.
I think so. I just think the defensive stopper in Ben Simmons is not on the court. Who's going to stop Harding and Durant? You know? And Joe Harris underperformed last year, and I think his game has come back. I just think they're more talented, Brooklyn, right now.
Yeah.
Without Simmons.
I definitely agree with you there. I do think they are the better team, and I appreciate Ricardo. And for him to say that, too, with a family member on the Sixers, I think the Nets are the better team. Even with Ben Simmons, I think the Nets are still the better team. I thought I picked the Nets to beat the Bucks. I thought the Nets were going to come out opening night and try to make a statement against Milwaukee. The Bucks won the championship last year. They knocked off the Nets when the Nets were all beat up. And then you had the comments the offseason about Giannis talking about how he didn't take the easy way to the championship. You know, he was essentially throwing jabs at guys like Kevin Durant teaming up with other superstars. So I thought the Nets would come out in Milwaukee opening night. They're getting their rings. Milwaukee's feeling good about themselves, and the Nets would be hungrier. And yet, as that game unfolded on opening night, disappointing effort for the Nets. They didn't have it. They didn't have the effort. The Bucks were the hungrier team. They played harder. So I think the Nets bounce back tonight, but I don't know. On the road again to the Sixers. They are the better team. I just didn't like what I saw from them in that opener for Brooklyn. For the Sixers, yeah, Ben Simmons is a big loss on the floor because now that bumps up. Joel Embiid has to be the guy, and Tobias Harris has to be the second guy, and you're putting guys in roles that really aren't supposed to be. Tobias is best served as the number three, with Ben Simmons being up there with Embiid running things, and then just the distraction of it all and the comments, and you have Ben Simmons showing up to practice with the cell phone in the pocket, and now he's claiming he's got back issues. He can't, you know, come to practice. He can't play, and Joel Embiid talking to the media about, it's not on us to babysit this kid and yada, yada, yada. You know, there's a lot of noise, and I try to avoid noise, which is the same thing with Washington State. Whether you agree or you don't, you know, half their coaching staff just got let go because they refused to get the vaccine, and now they're going to be suing the school. So it's just a lot of noise. Now, the Raiders responded well their first game without John Gruden this past week. Maybe Washington State will tomorrow. Their defensive coordinator is going to be the interim head coach for the rest of the season, but they lost their head coach and a handful of assistants as well for the same reason. I don't know. I don't know what you're going to get from Washington State. Maybe it's a rallying point. We all know people in our life that, especially teammates, if you played sports or if you ever coached sports, certain kids respond well to, you know, getting yelled at. That lights a fire under them, or they just huddle in the corner if you yell at them, right? They shut down. And it's similar when you deal with tough situations. We all have friends. You know the friends who can deal with adversity really well. They stay cool, calm, collective. You have the other ones who freak out over every little thing. They're not very good in stressful situations. It's the same thing with these football teams. All right, you're dealing with some adversity. You just lost your head coach. I think their offensive coordinator as well. You got BYU coming to town. Right? Are you going to rally around this, or is this going to force you to kind of pack it in because, you know, like, woe is me, some tough times here with the Washington State football team? I don't know. That's why I would stay away from that game, because that's one of those BYU's favorite on the road. Washington State doesn't have their head coach. Seems like BYU should win that game. But sometimes, like we saw with the Raiders, I did not expect that performance from the Raiders this past week, winning by double digits without Gruden. I thought with middle of the week, you lose your head coach and play caller, and the Raiders players were defending him. I think the Raiders players were upset. I mean, maybe they went out there and played for him, and that's why they played well. But I thought this is going to be a bit of a mess, and they played really well. So I would tell you that I would guess Washington State, I would think this could be a little bit of a mess, but maybe they come out and they play well, right? Kind of, you know, win one for the Gipper. And this is a little bit different. The coach just didn't want to get the vaccine. They were the rules, so the school dismissed him. It's a little bit different. But still, as a player, right, you may take that a little personally. Hey, we just lost our coach. They got rid of our coach, the guy that recruited us. Let's go out there and play for him now. I don't know. So I stay away from those games. But I think BYU is the better team to begin with. Washington State doesn't have their head coach. BYU should win. But as they say, that's why they play the games. The Nets should beat the Sixers tonight. But the Nets, I was very disappointed with their opening night performance a couple of nights ago. We'll see if they perform better tonight. All right, with all that said, when we come back, we'll preview Week 7 of the NFL season. We'll run through all of the games on Sunday. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Unchain my heart. Baby, let me go. Unchain my heart. Cause you don't love me no more.
Coming up, we'll preview every game in Week 7 of the NFL season in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I'll give you my official picks of the football weekend coming up next hour. And we'll also take a look at an update halfway through the season here for name, image, and likeness. Plenty more to do on a Football Friday here, jam-packed this afternoon. We've done our opponent's scouting report for Texas A&M and Pittsburgh, getting ready for those games this weekend. Week 7 of the NFL season got underway last night. By the way, I told you, take the Browns, take the under. They both came through, so we're off to a good start this weekend. I'll get to all my official picks coming up next hour. But every Friday, as we get ready for the football season, we run through all of the games in the NFL slate, and I give you my rundown and preview and what to expect. I'll give you the biggest storyline and also maybe a stat that you need to know, the numbers you need to know for the games as well as we preview Week 7 of the NFL season.
Denver Broncos at Cleveland Browns.
We start with a review before the preview, the Thursday night football game last night where the Browns get the win for the Broncos, four straight losses. And last night, with how depleted the Browns were, not a great team. So the Broncos have lost four straight games and a couple of bad losses mixed in there after the 3-0 start. As I said on the show yesterday, now you really have to look out for Vic Fangio and his seat warming up there in Denver. On the flip side for the Browns, as I said, going into the game, it played out exactly as I thought. You know, Case Keenum wasn't great, but he did enough, and the Browns won on a short week. And you see that, and you think, you know, why invest all this money to a quarterback when we're not driven by the quarterback? And by investing that money in the quarterback, it's going to hurt us in other areas. The Browns have the most talented roster in the NFL. You can drop in most quarterbacks into that team, especially once you don't have to pay so much, and still win a lot. They won last night with Case Keenum. Why break the bank for Baker Mayfield and have to break up other parts of that team? Wasn't a very interesting game. You were probably watching Braves baseball instead, rightfully so. But the Browns get a much-needed victory to get over 500. You had to win that game, even with all your injuries, beat a bad Broncos team at home, and they did.
Kansas City Chiefs at Tennessee Titans.
I think this is the game of the NFL weekend. For the Titans, if you beat the Bills and the Chiefs in less than a week's time, right, that's impressive. The two best teams in the AFC a year ago. Now, the Titans get to stay home, and the Chiefs are coming to them. That helps. They beat the Bills at home. They get the Chiefs now at home on Sunday. This is, to me, the best game of the weekend for a couple of different reasons. Number one, these two teams, the Chiefs are 3-3, the Titans are 4-2. But going into this year, we thought these would be two of the best teams in the AFC. But not only that, it's been about the offenses. The Chiefs have the most explosive offense in the league. Their problems have just been turnovers. But in terms of big plays downfield, they're number one. The Titans' defense has surrendered the fourth most big plays downfield. On the flip side, however, the Chiefs are last in the league in rush defense, and the Titans, meanwhile, have Derrick Henry, who ran wild against the Bills on Monday. So both teams should be able to move the football and score points. For Tennessee, the advantage is you have that run game. Keep Mahomes on the sideline. Try to shorten the game. Help out your defense a little bit. With Derrick Henry running the football, the Chiefs are averaging to allow over 5 yards per carry. Think about that. Every time you hand it off, you're gaining half the yards you need for a first down. You run it twice, you have a first down every time against the Chiefs. That defense has been shredded on the ground. Derrick Henry should have a huge day. I think the Titans may win this one at home. Teams coming off a short week are 6-2 straight up this year. In these situations, that hasn't been a problem. They just beat the Bills on Monday. And for Kansas City, the real test for them will be that second half against the Washington football team last Sunday. Was that legitimate, or was that them going up against a bad team? Because their defense tossed a shutout. They took care of the football. But in that first half, the defense wasn't as strong. They turned it over three more times. Which Chiefs teams are we going to get? That defense has been terrible. They turn the football over. They commit penalties. That's going to be hard to win on the road against the Titans, especially with Derrick Henry running wild against Kansas City on Sunday.
New York Jets at New England Patriots.
Zach Wilson's second attempt against Bill Belichick. Now, the Patriots only have two wins. The Jets only have one. These two teams on paper aren't separated by much, but if you watch them, there seems to be a wide gap between these two. The Patriots have had a lot of close losses. The Jets haven't been all that competitive most weeks. Now, of course, the storyline always in these games, Bill Belichick against rookies. He's 23-6 against rookies all time. That includes 13-0 at home. The Patriots are at home this week. And remember, when these two face each other earlier in the year, it feels really cruel to make Zach Wilson face Belichick twice in the first month and a half of his career, but that's the case. And when Zach Wilson went up against Belichick last month, at home, he had 4 interceptions, including 3 in the first half. The Jets are coming off a bye. They already have faced this defense. We'll see if Zach Wilson is any more comfortable or plays any better Sunday against New England. I don't think so. The Patriots are favored by a touchdown for a reason. They have the much more calm and controlled quarterback who will take care of the football. Belichick will provide fits for Zach Wilson on Sunday. I think the Patriots win. I think Zach Wilson is in for another tough day. And the Patriots, by the way, 0-4 at home for the first time since 1993. I think they get their first home victory of the season Sunday by making things very hard once again on the rookie Zach Wilson.
Carolina Panthers at New York Giants.
This is a must-win for the Panthers. I know they're on the road, but they are favored, and the Giants are 1-5. And more than that, the Giants are just so beat up. Barkley's a game-time decision. Tony is listed as doubtful. Galladay, I don't think, is going to play. They put their left tackle on IR. And if you go and you look at Daniel Jones's numbers, he was playing really well to start this year. Then he turned into a pumpkin, the old Daniel Jones, on Sunday when he didn't have his left tackle. He's not going to have him this Sunday. He may not have him again this season. If you go back and you look at the numbers, Daniel Jones is a different quarterback without his best offensive lineman. I mean, just ask Patrick Mahomes about the Super Bowl last year. All quarterbacks need a good offensive line. So for the Panthers, you get Daniel Jones now without that left tackle. That's a huge difference. And the Panthers are able to get after the quarterback. That, to me, is the difference in the game. Can you pressure Daniel Jones? You should be able to, but can you on Sunday? And if you can, you'll make things difficult. You'll get some turnovers. The Giants probably won't score a ton of points, especially if Barkley's not playing. And the Panthers, coming off 3 straight losses, this is a game you have to win. You can't lose 4 in a row. You can't lose to a 1-win Giants team, even if you're on the road. You're favored for a reason, right? And for Darnold, it's his return to that stadium, not against the Jets. He's already played them, but back in that stadium that he used to play in. And the Panthers are clearly missing Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey's injury has hurt all aspects of this team. The offensive line, the passing game, just Sam Darnold's production, obviously the run game, but also the defense. When McCaffrey was on the field, the Panthers allowed just 10 points per game, second fewest in the league. Since McCaffrey's injury, they're allowing 30 points per game, fifth most in the NFL. This went from a top defense in the league to one of the worst the last couple of weeks without McCaffrey. You can't play keep away. Sam Darnold's turning the football over more frequently, giving short fields. right? This team really needs Christian McCaffrey. But in the meantime, what they really need is a victory, and you cannot lose to a one-win, beat-up Giants team on Sunday. Get after Daniel Jones. Get some pressure. Force some turnovers. Win that turnover margin. Make it easier on your defense and get that much-needed victory.
Cincinnati Bengals at Baltimore Ravens.
This is the other intriguing game, really big game of the NFL Sunday. If the Bengals win this game, because of the tiebreaker, they would take over first place over the Ravens. The Bengals would be in first place as we'd be heading to Halloween, having just beaten the Ravens. I have flip-flopped on the Bengals. I keep going back and forth. I say, they deserve some credit. But when it comes time to picking them, right, I still can't bring myself to pick the Bengals in these big games. There's still a touchdown underdog against the Ravens, so Vegas thinks there's still a pretty sizable gap between these two. But here's a huge opportunity for Cincinnati. You win this game in Baltimore. You take over first place. You just beat the Ravens. It's like, hold on. Wait a minute. This team is really good. The Bengals, in their defense, and pun intended, they have allowed the fifth fewest points in the league this year. So we pay a lot of attention to Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor, Ja'Marr Chase. This defense, they made a lot of moves this offseason, especially in that secondary, and this defense has been playing really well. Now you get Lamar Jackson at home, maybe your toughest test of the year, more so than even Aaron Rodgers 2 weeks ago. But on the flip side, for Joe Burrow, he had the worst game of his career against the Ravens a year ago. Now he goes to Baltimore against a tough defensive coordinator. How well will Joe play? And the other reason why this is such a big game is because not only first place on the line and the Bengals trying to prove themselves, but the last three times these two teams have played, the Ravens have won all three by a total score of 14-19. The Bengals have scored 19 points the last three games combined against the Ravens, and they have lost by a total of 100 points the last three games. These games haven't even been close. But the Bengals are playing good football. Joe Burrow seems to be healthy. The Bengals' defense is really tough. So a big test for the Bengals. Prove yourself Sunday in Baltimore. If you beat the Ravens, then we really have to start talking about Cincinnati as one of the better teams in the AFC. Intriguing game Sunday.
Atlanta Falcons at Miami Dolphins.
Tua has never had back-to-back 300-yard passing games in his career. Small sample size. He hasn't played a lot. But he hasn't had back-to-back games like that. Last week, he had over 300 yards in London. Now he goes up against the Falcons defense, which I don't think is very good. But how about the fact that the Falcons have not allowed a 300-yard passer all year? So, Tua, how well will he play on Sunday? Because I think he's playing for his job. And we get these rumors of Tua potentially losing his job to Deshaun Watson, the Dolphins going out and getting Deshaun Watson. Just as I was talking last segment about different teams and players, will that motivate Tua? Or will that make him, you know, kind of go into his shell? Will that make him shut down? I think if you're a competitor like that, it motivates you. I think it puts a chip on your shoulder. Tua hears all this, and hears, you know, the Dolphins want to replace him. He says, screw that. I got something to prove. And he played really well last week against the Jaguars. He has a chance to do it again here against the Falcons. I think Tua plays well at home against Atlanta on Sunday as he tries to play for his job or at least an opportunity somewhere else. But the intriguing part, the interesting part about this game, the interesting aspect is these two teams, their last games are both in London. And it's up to you if you play in London when you take your bye week. The Falcons chose to take their bye week after that game like most teams. The Dolphins did not. The Dolphins just played in London this past Sunday. And they said, no, we'd rather have the bye later in the year. So you have both teams coming back from London, but the Falcons get an extra week coming back from London. The Dolphins came right back from London. They're playing Sunday against the Falcons. So I'm also curious to see what we get. Or is it going to be a team that looks a little jet-lag, a little worn out, compared to the rested Falcons who are playing in Miami? But the Falcons, Matt Ryan against Tua, you really can't lose a game like this. The Dolphins have just one win this year. The Falcons should find a way to win coming off a bye against Miami.
Washington football team at Green Bay Packers.
I think this game will be ugly. The Washington football team hung in there for a half with the Chiefs last week, and then it turned ugly. And that was at home. Now you go to Green Bay. The Packers have the best home record in the NFL over the last 3 years. And this Washington football team, they're just not the same team. If you gave me Fitzpatrick and last year's defense, I think this would be very intriguing. But it's Taylor Heinicke. Now, the Packers' defense isn't very good. They don't get after the quarterback. Heinicke may be able to do some things. But the Washington football team, they have surrendered more points through the first 6 weeks of this season than any other year since 1998. The worst defense so far for Washington football team in 24 years. And now you get Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau Field. I think this is a little bit ugly for Washington football team. I think Rodgers has a big day. Green Bay's favored by a touchdown for a reason. I think they put away the Washington football team relatively early and get a pretty easy win at home.
Philadelphia Eagles at Las Vegas Raiders.
I'm curious to see how the Raiders respond. Was that like a one-week thing after John Gruden, or are they just going to be totally fine here moving forward about their head coach and play caller? They get the Eagles coming to them on Sunday. The Eagles have extra time to prepare, and Jalen Hurts has been the one area where Jalen Hurts has been really good is against the pass rush, against the blitz. And the Raiders, that defense is not good except when they're getting after the quarterback. They found a pass rush this year, and they need that. So as they try to come after the quarterback, as they tend to do, that may actually be to Jalen Hurts' advantage. Also, by the way, Las Vegas has not been good as a home favorite. At home, games are expected to win. That's when they usually let you down. They're favored at home here against the Eagles. I think after everything of the last 2 weeks, maybe you're in for an emotional letdown. They played really well last week, won without their coach, John Gruden. Maybe that was for John Gruden. But then you come back the next week, you're a little bit further removed from that whole situation, maybe a little more emotionally drained. I'm curious to see just how the Raiders play on Sunday as we continue to move forward for them without their head coach and play caller.
Detroit Lions at Los Angeles Rams.
So this has the whole, you know, revenge game aspect. Stafford against Jared Goff. The Lions are a team that last week they got blown out for the first time. I think we have reached the point here where they have just had enough. They can't keep getting themselves off the mat. They're frustrated. They're a bad team. I think we get to the point now where the Lions become a really bad team moving forward. And the Rams are so much better. So the Rams will blow out the Lions. This will not be a competitive game. Double-digit favorites this year are 8-0 straight up. They don't lose games like this. They're heavy favorites for that reason. They're that much better. I'm just curious to see how Jared Goff plays against his former boss. He got called out by his own coach this week. I'm sure he already has a chip on his shoulder. He's never won a game without Sean McVay. Now he goes up against McVay, and he could try to show him, hey, you shouldn't have gotten rid of me. Problem is, he's at a real talent disadvantage. I think this is ugly. The Rams blow out the Lions. Goff doesn't play well, but you know he's going to want to against his former team.
Chicago Bears at Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
How about the fact that this is the first time in Brady's long career that he's going up against an Ohio State quarterback? I found that shocking, right? Because Brady's a Michigan guy. This is the first time going up against Justin Fields that he's facing an Ohio State quarterback in 20 years. How did that not happen before? The case here, the Bears, they have a young rookie quarterback in Justin Fields. You want to make it easy on him? Problem is, the Buccaneers have the number one rush defense. They're vulnerable in the secondary. I don't think Fields will be able to take advantage. The Bears have also allowed the most sacks in the league. The Buccaneers can get after the quarterback with that good front seven. So this is just a bad matchup for Chicago. You're going on the road to Tampa. You have a rookie quarterback going up against a really good defensive front. They're not going to be able to run it. Fields is going to be under pressure, and he's going to have to try to keep up with Tom Brady. I think this is another one of those ugly games for the Bucs and Brady. Tough matchup for the Bears.
Houston Texans at Arizona Cardinals.
Skip this one. The Texans are 1-5. Don't bother watching. The Cardinals are 6-0. The Cardinals are favored by 18 at home. This should be a blowout. The Cardinals have impressed me the last couple of weeks. They can impress me again by handling their business here, by blowing out a bad team like they're supposed to. I don't have much to say here. They're favored by 18. They're undefeated. The Cardinals should handle their business with pretty relative ease against Houston.
Indianapolis Colts at San Francisco 49ers.
Jimmy Garoppolo is supposed to return for this game. We'll see how he does on Sunday Night Football. The Colts are playing better the last couple of weeks, and these are two teams that have really dealt with a lot of injuries and a lot of adversity this year, more so than other teams. So this is one of those interesting matchups of two kind of even teams in the same spot. Let's see who responds a little bit better. The Colts are playing better football. The Niners have been in disarray, but you get Jimmy Garoppolo back Sunday Night Football. To me, the Niners are just the better team. I would think they would win at home, but there's a lot of questions. They haven't taken care of the football. They haven't been crisp. They've had a lot of injuries. Same goes for the Colts. So it's kind of, okay, which team's going to suck less on Sunday? That'll be the team that wins this game.
New Orleans Saints at Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, lastly, Monday Night Football, Saints Seahawks, Geno Smith against Jameis Winston. What a quarterback matchup for Monday Night Football. How about the fact that Geno Smith, he at least has covered the spread in 5 of his last 6 primetime games, so he plays well in the bright lights. Coming off a bye, they have a really good defense. They go to Seattle. I imagine they'll make things really difficult on Geno Smith and the Seahawks. They're in trouble without Russell Wilson. Geno, I don't think, can keep them afloat. But we'll talk more about that game on Monday. And there's our Week 7 NFL preview. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.